two verses of scripture I want to use as text tonight. One of them here is in Proverbs 31:10. Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. The other verse is in Ruth chapter 3, verse 11. And now, my daughter, fear not. I will do to thee all that thou requirest, for all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. If you have a piece of paper, or you can use your finger, put one finger there in Proverbs 31 and the other one in the book of Ruth. We're going to bounce back and forth between these two books tonight a good bit. In Proverbs 31, in the first few verses, we find reference to the words of King Lemuel, the prophecy that his mother taught him. And some scholars have speculated that perhaps Lemuel was Lemuel's mother was Bathsheba, and that she had passed on to him the story of Ruth, and that Solomon had been blessed by the stories of this woman's accomplishment. The word Lemuel means devoted to God. That was David's intent for him, and he started out that way, but he swerved off quite a bit. But this woman, this virtuous woman that is revealed to us in Proverbs 31 is personified, I believe, by this Moabite woman, Ruth. This woman who has been redeemed by Boaz. And I think that there are, I've got eight, there could be more. Eight characteristics that these two women share. And I want to try to guide you tonight as we look at those eight characteristics and that are shared by these two women, these godly saints who are committed to God's work in their houses. I'll tell you, I'm thankful for the women in our church. I'm thankful for your faithfulness. I'm thankful for your manner of life and for your value system. And I rejoice in it. And I think in these two women, we can find a good example to encourage us, you ladies, to continue as you go, and we men to honor you and appreciate you as God uses you. So I want to preach to you tonight a message that I just simply titled it, Ruth, the Proverbs 31 Wife. The first thing we see that these women were devoted to their families. Now, there was a time in my life when all women seemed to be that way. Women would go hungry so their children could eat. They would put up with all kinds of antics from their husbands in order to live in a godly way. I was sitting back here before you all came, and I've been reading a book by Archibald Alexander, and he was telling in there the account of a man who was afflicted with drinking, and he talked about his wife, who was a godly woman, how she would gather her children around her, and she would get to thinking about the fact that her husband was going to drink himself to death, and she'd look at her children and just weep because she thought that one day they're not going to have a father. But these women were devoted to their families. Ruth had no children, and so she was totally committed to Naomi. She had begged Naomi when they came back to the land, when Naomi said, I'm going back to Bethlehem. She had begged her to go with her. She said, I don't care what anybody else does. I want to be with you. I want to be wherever you are. That's what I want to do. And she made a commitment to follow Naomi wherever she went. In chapter 1, verse 17, she said, where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee and me. Now, her arguments were so persuasive that Naomi surrendered. Remember, Naomi had become bitter. She lost her husband. She lost her children. She lost her hope. And when she got back home, everybody said, "Oh, it's good to see Naomi." She said, "Don't call me Naomi, call me bitter. That's what I am. I'm bitter." But when Ruth said to her, "I want to be where you are. I want to be where you are. I want to do what you do. I want to, your God be my God. Your people be my people. When you die, that's where I want to die." Tells us Ruth 1:18, when she saw that she was steadfastly minded to go with her, then she left speaking unto her. Well, this model wife that we have here in Proverbs 31, she also was similar in her character. She was a virtuous woman. She was upright, and she was trusted by her husband. Verse 10 says, "Who can find a virtuous woman?" But this man looked at his wife, and he said, "What kind of woman is this? What kind of price can you put on it? Her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband does safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life." This woman was no seeker of simple pleasures or worldly possessions. That's a rare commodity in the world you live in. Rare commodity. She wasn't a seeker of simple pleasures. She was not a seeker of worldly possessions. She was a woman that worked hard, a woman that was successful, had a business. But that wasn't her objective. Her objective was her family. She was a woman of faith, committed to do rightly throughout her life. I know some of you ladies work, some of you have worked, and it always bothers me when I hear godly women, somebody asks them, said, "Well, what do you do?" And they almost shamefully say, "Well, I'm just a housewife." Well, if you're just a housewife, don't be ashamed of that. Rejoice in it. Be thankful that God's put you in a place where you can do that, because some people can't. Her example was so clear that she just simply wanted to honor her husband. In Proverbs 31:23, it tells us, "Her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land." This man was known by his wife. I used to think that I had had some success in life and made some accomplishments and so on. At one time in my life, I used to think, "Boy, my wife was fortunate to have me." But I found out as I got older how fortunate I was to have her. And I don't know that I really appreciated it until she was gone. Second thing about these women is they were delighted in doing what they do. I heard somebody, I don't know who it was, the other day I heard somebody say, "I just hate my job. I just hate what I do. I hate what I do." Ruth was a woman that delighted to do what she did. In Ruth chapter 2 and verse 2, first part of Ruth the Moabite said unto Naomi, "Let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn after him in whose sight I shall find grace." Ruth was willing to do whatever was necessary to care for Naomi. This was not a popular position. She had no objections at all to being a lowly gleaner. This was about the lowest job in the land. It was a place that was held by widows, by cripples, by orphans. They'd go into the fields and they'd wait till the harvesters picked all the grain. They'd go around and they'd pick up scraps. Ruth is, in my mind, beautiful woman, this beautiful Moabite woman. She went into the field early in the morning and she worked all day long. She sought Naomi's approval on her labor. She said, "Just tell me it's okay." And Naomi blessed her She gave her permission to serve. The last part of verse 2 there, in Ruth 2, says, let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn after him in whose sight I shall find grace. And she said unto her, Go, my daughter. There was a special relationship between this woman. I have no idea how old that Naomi was, but she had some age on her. She was probably in her 60s, maybe her 80s, and she was amazed that this young woman would follow her, but she gave her permission to go into the field and glean. But the woman in Proverbs 31 also was committed to labor and to serve. In Proverbs 31:13, it says, she seeketh wool and flax, and worketh willingly with her hands. This woman sought the materials and the goods to tend to her family. It doesn't tell us that exactly there, but it appears that this woman was involved in shearing the sheep and getting the wool. Now, today, it's about as rare as finding a bull elephant in the backyard as it is to find a woman that can sew. But when you stop and think about in biblical times, that these women didn't just go down to the store and buy 5 yards of piece goods and a couple of rolls of thread, that they had to shear the wool off of sheep, and then they had to clean it. They had to comb it, they had to filter it, and then they had to spin it into thread and then weave it into a garment and then sew those together to make apparel for their family. And yet she did that. She saw whatever was necessary to tend to her family. I didn't realize this until I was a well-grown man that what my grandmother and what my mother and other women I knew had done to provide for us things that we just took as necessary. And I'm sure some of you, maybe all of you, have experienced that same thing. This was a godly woman. She worked willingly to do whatever was needed by her household. Whatever was needed. We don't know much about that nowadays. People don't know much about doing what's necessary. They wait for somebody to do it. I had a conversation with an elderly gentleman while I was up in Michigan. We were sitting out one night after services, sitting outside there, and we got to talking about things. And he was asking me where I was from this, that, and the other, and we got talking about things, and he said, you know, when I was a young man, he said, we didn't have all the stuff we got right here now. You did what you had to do just to get by. And I said, well, today we got a lot of folks who don't seem to be willing to do that. And he said, I know, I see that. He said, I see it in my grandchildren. And but these two women, Ruth and the woman in Proverbs 31, seem to be committed to do what needs to be done. The woman in Proverbs 31 for her family, Ruth for her mother-in-law. Gracious. Now, these two women were both very diligent in their efforts. They didn't just wish for things. They worked at it. In Ruth chapter 2, verse 7, she said, I pray you let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came and hath continued even from the morning until now, and she tarried a little in the house. This was Boaz's husbandman telling Boaz what this woman had done. She sought permission from the husbandman to glean. Now, the law of the land said she could just do that. She could just go glean. But this woman, Ruth, very graciously comes to this man and says, can I glean in your field? She asked permission for that which the law allowed her to do. I don't see that much anymore. She labored long and she labored hard to provide for she and Naomi's essential needs. They just needed something to eat. They had nothing to eat. They had no money. They had no property. But she did what she had to do to make sure they had something to eat. In verse 17 of chapter 2, it says, "So she gleaned in the field until even, and beat out that she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley," or about a little over half a bushel. She gleaned from early morning, early in the morning, until the end of the day. And then she took the grain after she'd harvested all day long, and she took it to the harvest field and she winnowed it. She threw it up in the air, let the wind blow the dust and the chaff away, and she processed it. And she took it to Naomi. Said, "Here's supper." She continued to work like this. Not just for one day or 2 days, but for many days of the harvest. Verse 23. "So she kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean unto the end of barley harvest and of wheat harvest, and dwelt with her mother-in-law." Now it tells us back in the last verse of the first chapter that they came to Bethlehem. It was the beginning of the first days of the barley harvest. But now we find she works every day until the end of the barley harvest and then the end of the wheat harvest to meet their needs. She was committed to do what was necessary. She took the grain and she continued for all these days. I was talking to a man not too long ago, and I've talked to several people, and they tell me the same thing, that this is a common thing in our day and time for both men and women. Somebody hires them to work, and they work maybe a day or 2 days, or maybe a few days at the most, and they just go home. And I was talking to a fellow the other day, and he said, "I hired somebody to..." I asked him, I said, he would tell me the last time I'd seen him that he needed somebody, he was trying to find somebody to help him. And I said, "Did you find somebody to help you?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, "I found a fellow. Thought he was going to be real good, real nice young fellow." And he worked pretty good. Monday, from the time we went to work, he worked pretty good till lunchtime. And said he went home to eat lunch. He never came back, and I haven't seen him since then. Ruth wasn't of that order. She worked all through the barley harvest, all through the wheat harvest, to do what needed to be done. In Proverbs 31, it tells us that this perfect wife also labored consistently and persistently. Look in verse 14. Proverbs 31:14. "She's like a merchant ship. She brings her food from afar. She rises while it's yet night, gives meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. She considers the field and buyeth it with the fruit of her hands. She plants a vineyard. She girds her loins with strength and strengtheneth her arms." Here was a woman that labored. She labored at the loom to weave cloth for her family and her servants. Look at verse 19. "She layeth her hands to the spindle, and her hands hold the distaff. She stretches out her hand to the poor, yea, she reaches forth her hands to the needy. She's not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet." She not only made clothes for her family and clothes for her servant, but verse 24 says, "She makes fine linen and selleth it, and delivereth girdles unto the merchant." Now, we don't hear much about girdles anymore. When I was a boy, ladies wore girdles. But in the Bible, when it talks about girdles, it's belts, wide belts usually. So this woman, while she wasn't making clothes for her family and making clothing for her servants, she was making clothing to sell. So she was a busy woman. She carefully attended to the needs of her household. She was not lazy. She wasn't careless in her manner of life. She looketh well, it says in verse 27, to the ways of her household and eateth not the bread of idols. My sister was telling me the other day, one of her granddaughters had told her, said, I don't know how you take care of children. They're just wearing me out. I just have to go take a nap. Well, I guess you can take a nap, but somebody's got to watch your children. These women were also dedicated to a godly manner of speech. I've been raised in such a way that I kind of got used to men using bad language and saying things they shouldn't say. But I have to admit to you, I'm almost 69 years old, and I never have gotten used to women using bad language or speaking in a foul way. I just haven't. And it still disturbs me. And back in Ruth chapter 2, verse 10, it says, "Then she fell on her face and bowed herself to the ground and said unto him, Why have I found grace in thine eyes, that thou should take knowledge of me, seeing I am a stranger?" She petitioned Boaz with these gracious words. Why do you care about me? Why do you have a concern for me? Why do you have? I'm nobody. I'm nothing. This woman recognized that she was being shown grace by her kinsman. And she accepted her position as a stranger and an outcast. She said, I know who I am. I know what I am. I'm a Moabite. I'm an outcast. I'm a stranger in this land. I have no relationship here, but you're so nice to me. She begged the favor of this kinsman, this man who was the master of his fields. Look at verse 13. Then she said, "Let me find favor in thy sight, my Lord, for that thou hast comforted me, and for that thou hast spoken friendly unto thy handmaid, though I be not like unto one of thy handmaidens." She said, I'm not one of yours. I'm not one of yours. She said, I appreciate your kindness, your gracious words, and your gracious deeds. And she confessed that she was an outsider and not worthy of grace. But she was thankful. Well, the wife of Proverbs 31, we read over there, she also was identified by proper speech. Look at verse 26. She openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. I watch TV sometimes. I just turn it on and I flip the channels to see what's on. To be honest with you, I watch the shopping channels to see what's on sale. And I see shows on there like Atlanta Baseball Wives and the Sports Wives of Dallas, this, that, the other. And every once in a while, I'll leave it on there for just a minute and I'll listen. I can't listen but just a minute or two of it. And I thought, these are not the kind of women that I would want to honor. This is not what I would want to hear if I was a wise man. I would not want my wife to speak that way. When this woman spoke, she spoke with wisdom. She spoke with understanding. She opened her mouth, and wisdom comes out. Her tongue obeyed the law of kindness and hospitality. In her tongue is the law of kindness. I remember lady back years and years ago that I knew, Miss Alice, down at Dixfield, and she always had the sweetest personality. She was always so sweet. When she said something, it was worth listening to. When she said something, she spoke with kindness, with graciousness. And the last time I saw her, I'd taken somebody to the doctor's office and she was there. And we had a good chat while she was waiting for the doctor. That's what godly women do. These women were both completely dependent on God. Now, in chapter 2 of Ruth, we find that Boaz commended Ruth for her submission to God's care. Look at verse 12. He said, "The Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord God of Israel, in whose wings thou art come to trust." He assured her of God's promised blessings, and he assured her of God's mercy. He assured her that God was watching over her and that God was caring for her. The woman of wisdom, Proverbs 31, also is assured that joy is coming. In verse 31, the last part of it says, "And let her own works praise her in the gates." I learned a long time ago. I wish I could tell you I just learned it because I'm smart, but I learned it the hard way. That people who seek somebody to speak well of them usually seek in vain. This woman, her testimony is that her own works praise her in the gates. A child of God, and that means every child of God, must often endure trials and afflictions in this life. It's part of life. We are pilgrims. We must never forget that. We're just travelers. Some of you all travel more than others, and if you travel, you're going to have problems. The old car's going to quit on you every once in a while. You're going to have a flat tire, or run out of antifreeze, or something like that. You're going to check in a hotel at midnight some night and find out the air conditioner doesn't work. It just happens. We're pilgrims. A child of God has to endure that. We have to deal with the afflictions of life. But the children of God live every day with an assurance that joy is coming. I don't do a lot of counseling. Most people don't want to hear what I want to tell them. But I tell people occasionally somebody wants to talk to me, and I just tell them, look, you want joy in life? You follow God, and He'll give you joy. It may not be in this life. Folks, I've been around. I've seen some Christians that live pretty horrible lives. I've seen godly women that were married to men that ought to have been whipped like a horse. And yet they were faithful. I've seen people deal with afflictions, physical afflictions. I know a lady in Danville I didn't know anybody that had this. She has what's called fibromyalgia. There's no relief for it. Medicine doesn't work. Nothing works. And I'm always amazed when I see her. She's always got a smile. And she might tell you she's hurting all over, but she'll have something good to say. God's people will be that way. Affections of the flesh are shallow, and they're temporary. I went to my 50th high school reunion not long ago. Don't you tell anybody I said this, Brenda. I didn't recognize very many people. A lot of folks have changed, and they don't look like they used to. And some of the girls that were the prettiest and some of the boys that were the handsomest in my class when I was 18 years old and getting out of high school, they looked like they'd been rode hard and put up with. It just happens. People who reverence God, people who rejoice in God, are certain to be filled with joy. In everything, give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. Then these godly saints, and I think this is an important point that didn't get touched on too much today, These godly saints were very cautious in the way they dressed and in the manner of their appearance. Naomi gave Ruth some good advice in Ruth chapter 3, verse 3. She said, "Wash thyself therefore and anoint thee and put thy raiment upon thee and get thee down to the floor. But make not thyself known unto the man until he shall have done eating and drinking." Cleanliness is an admirable quality in all people. It is. It's just an admirable quality. I see people, and you'll have to excuse me, I'm not necessarily prejudiced, it's just I don't like this. I saw a lady earlier this week in a store, and she had tattoos from her neck. I mean, every piece of skin that was exposed on her, which was quite a bit of skin, was covered with tattoos. And I thought to myself, young lady, one of these days your children are going to ask you, "Well, why can't I get one of them?" And you're going to do one of two things. You're either going to say, "Don't be stupid like I was stupid," or you'll probably say, "Oh, we'll go ahead and get you one." That's what's corrupting the culture you live in. This woman was taught how to dress. She was taught how to approach a man. Naomi gave her good advice. I think girls today, a lot of girls, just they don't get good advice from their parents. They don't get good advice from their grandparents. They don't know how to deal with themselves. They don't know how to deal with boys. And it's part of the destruction of the age that we live in. The wise woman, on the other hand, dresses very carefully and very tastefully. Proverbs 31:22 says, "She maketh herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk and purple." And I commend the vast majority of the folks, the ladies who come to church here, in how you dress. This is not a who's gal. It's not a what do you call them? Hoot nanny, you know. And you don't need to come look like you're going to hoot nanny. Listen, this is where we meet God. And I ask you, if you knew you had a meeting set up with the President of the United States, would you go up there wearing a pair of hot pants and a halter top? I doubt it. Some people might, but I doubt it. But this is higher than a president. We come here and we meet with God. And that you'll find out that it goes on beyond that. She purchases and she prepares quality garments of good taste. I got in the closet the other day and I got some more of my wife's clothes out. I was going to take them to Goodwill and I thought, I don't know why I'm going to take these to Goodwill. There ain't a woman around that'll wear these dresses. They're too long for them. They're modest and they're tasteful. And I don't know what I'll do. I'll take them and they can do something with them. This woman wears appropriate clothes, appropriate colors, appropriate styles, and appropriate accessories. I don't know about you. I see ladies, not just young ladies, old ladies. I saw an elderly lady the other day. She had enough jewelry on. She couldn't have gone through one of those magnetic things at an airport. She'd have had to completely undress down to the skin. But these women knew how to dress. And I advise you, I commend you. You know, if you have an influence on young ladies, you've got children and grandchildren, you got neighbors, try to teach them. Nobody else is teaching them. If somebody doesn't teach them, they don't know. They just do what society tells them to do. But beyond her external garments, this woman also was clothed with character. The first part of verse 25 there, it says, "Strength and honor are her clothing." We may not think about that. Strength and honor are her clothing. She has strength. Mental strength. Physical strength. But primarily she has spiritual strength. If you got spiritual strength, it'll more than compensate for all the physical and emotional weaknesses you may have. This woman is robed in honor. She's covered in decency, and she is submitted to the will of God. You ladies, I can't tell you, there's nothing as important as that. Then these women were discreet in their dealings with men. Ruth had been told by Naomi how to approach Boaz. Look back in chapter 3, verse 6. Ruth chapter 3, verse 6. And she went down unto the floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law bade her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of corn, and she came softly and uncovered his feet and laid her down. So it came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid and turned himself, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. Boaz responded when he recognized it was Ruth with words of honor that he pronounced to her. He said, verse 10, "Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, inasmuch as thou followest not young men, whether poor or rich." He said, "You've become more godly the longer I've known you." Now, a lot of girls will act good to impress a fellow for a little while. Then they go downhill. And I know a lot of guys do the same thing. I was part of that ilk myself. But this man commended this woman for her godliness. He submitted to her kindness, and he committed that he was going to redeem her in verse 13. These women honor their helpmeets. In Proverbs 31:11, it says, "The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life." This woman is trusted. She's trusted by her husband, and she has no need for riches. Been about 20 years ago, a fella called me and said, "Could I talk to you for a few minutes?" I said, "Sure. Meet me over at church." And I was shocked. The fellow told me, he said, "I can't trust my wife." I said, "Do what?" He said, "I cannot trust my wife. I can't believe a word she says." He said, "She'll tell me that grass is orange and expect me to believe it." And I thought, "You gotta be kidding yourself." But I began to talk to him, and I talked to her later, and I found out that he knew what he was talking about. I can tell you as a man that it's a great thing to have a wife you can trust, a wife you can believe. She was faithful every day to obey and to serve her husband. There's something wrong in a society like one we live in when a woman is ashamed and embarrassed to be submissive to her husband. So righteous is this woman that her husband is honored by her. In the 23rd verse of the Proverbs 31 says, "Her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land." This man sits there among the leaders of his city. He sits there among the potentates of his nation. And he is honored not just for who he is, but for the character and the conduct of his wife. He's made to sit among the city fathers because of her godly conduct. Now, I've been involved in a lot of different things in my life. And I'll have to tell you, there have been situations where I wanted to appoint someone or have somebody elected to a position in that organization, and I couldn't. I couldn't. Not because of them, but because of their wife. Then these women were honored by their family and their neighbors. Most godly women I know are concerned with two things. They want to be honored by God, and they want to be honored by their family. Ruth was exalted by the women of Bethlehem. Look back there in Ruth chapter 4, verse 14. The women said unto Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel. And he shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life and a nourisher of thine old age, for thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons, hath borne him." She was praised by the birth of a son. I don't know how old Ruth was this time. I personally think she was probably in her late 30s, maybe middle to late 30s. She never had a child, and God gives her a child. I love the stories in this Bible about women who've gone without a child for so many years. Sarah was almost 100 years old when Isaac was born. Hannah had gone many years without a child when Samuel was delivered. And Ruth now has a son. And she's honored by her neighbors. Not just because she had a baby, but because she was a woman of great faith. Great faith. These women's children and their husbands, they praise and honor them. Proverbs 31:28 says, "Her children arise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praiseth her." You know, children recognize a godly mother, a mother of character and worth. I wasn't raised in a Christian home, and I didn't have that kind of example. I had a godly grandmother, and she was an example to me and her other grandchildren. A faithful husband is excited by a wife of value and faith. Chapter 31, verse 28, the last part of it says, "Her husband also, and he praiseth her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all." I have to tell you, my wife was such an honor to me. It was such a pleasure to be married to her. It was such joy to me to see her appreciated by her students and her co-workers and people around her. Such women ought to be exalted. If not in this world by the mortals that surround them, then certainly by God in eternity's long day. Proverbs 31:31 says, "Give her the fruit of her hands and let her own works praise her in the gates." Her peers will cry out for her to be honored and praised. I hate to talk about my wife a lot, but she was really a humble woman. And it just used to amaze her when somebody would praise her. But even if people don't, you ladies listen to me, even if they don't, your godly works and your godly ways will declare throughout your life and for years after you're gone that you had a new heart and a new life and a new hope. I rejoiced in my dear wife. I will always exalt her. And I hope my sons will as well. I'm thankful for godly women that God has put in my life and in my ministry. I'm thankful for every one of you ladies in this church. You're such a blessing to me. Be sure, when you have opportunity, that you praise godly women whenever you encounter them. We were talking earlier before service started about how so many people we've known have have passed on, or they're so very old now and feeble. And I tell you what, there are a generation of folks that need to be encouraged. They need to be praised. They need to be honored. Not because of what they are, but because of what God's done in them. They've been honored highly by God, and they ought to be honored by God's people. There's a preacher named Roland Hill that lived back in the late 1700s and early 1800s. And he wrote a few songs. Here are some of the words from one of his hymns. You see, he wrote, "On us thou hast bestowed thy grace. Be to our children kind. Among thy saints give them a place and leave not one behind. Happy we then shall live below the remnant of our day. And when to brighter worlds we go, shall long resound thy praise." Thank God for dear women that love Him and surrender to His purpose. Amen.